some of the largest social media platforms are gearing up for the 2020 elections, and there's a growing divide over how to handle political advertising. Facebook has been taking criticism for its policy not to fact-check ads from political campaigns. And in the complete opposite direction, Twitter says it's going to ban all political ads on its platform worldwide. Both moves could have a big impact on the 2020 presidential campaign. Margo Suska is a professor of journalism and mass communication at American University in Washington, D.C. Margo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me back.
Before we get to the particulars, Margo, how big a role do our social media play now in our political campaigns?
I think that what 2016 showed us is that social media played a pivotal role in presidential elections. And in 2020, I think we've got to look ahead to see that it is going to play an even larger role with tens of millions of dollars in ad revenue pouring in messages, everything ranging from advertisements as well as news content about candidates being shared there. Social media overwhelmingly is becoming the spot for discourse in political campaigns.
Let's go to Facebook now. Can you tell us more about what they've decided to do when it comes to political ads?
I think it's more what Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg discussed this in the last couple of weeks about what they're not going to do that made news. Essentially, Mark Zuckerberg is saying that all of a sudden he is the expert in free speech, and he will not, what he considers, censor political advertisements. He also will not allow Facebook to take down political advertisements that they know have outright lies in them. So what he's saying is, in the marketplace of ideas, let it run. And there have been, he faced criticism, as you know, on Capitol Hill for not doing more and not taking more action. Elizabeth Warren, Democratic candidate for president, she got involved in the debate by purposely running an ad saying that, kind of a snarky ad saying that Facebook founder Mark Zuckerberg was supporting Donald Trump for his re-election campaign. And she was saying, look how ludicrous this is, that I can run this ad that is completely false and you won't take it down. So a lot of implications, I think, looking ahead to 2020 in big news from both Twitter and Facebook these last couple of weeks.
Well, speaking of Facebook, CEO Mark Zuckerberg on Capitol Hill, here's part of an exchange he had with Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
Would I be able to run advertisements on Facebook targeting Republicans in primary saying that they voted for the Green New Deal? I mean, if you're not fact-checking political advertisements, I'm just trying to understand the bounds here. What's fair game?
I don't know the answer to that off the top of my head. I think
so probably. You don't know if I'll be able to do that.
I think probably.
What do you make of that hypothetical?
Well, I think that what she showed with her questioning he eventually had to cave to her and say, well, yes, you would be able to run that ad. Now, what's interesting is that in the days since that exchange, Facebook did remove an ad saying that there was a Republican senator who supported the Green New Deal, which would be contrary to their political beliefs. But it was removed because it had been put up, Zuckerberg said, or Facebook said, because it was run not by a politician, but by a political action campaign.
Here's a little more of that exchange between Zuckerberg and Ocasio-Cortez with his rationale on the policy.
Do you see a potential problem here with a complete lack of fact-checking on political advertisements?
Well, Congresswoman, I think lying is bad, and I think if you were to run an ad that had a lie, that would be bad. That's different from it being, in our position, the right thing to do to prevent your constituents or people in an election from seeing that you had lied.
So the idea there, and this is a little different for candidates and office holders themselves. They're the ones who, in particular, don't appear to get any fact-checking under this policy. Is there a case to be made there? Okay, if you're a politician, you should be able to say what you want, and then your constituents can judge you if they think you've lied.
Well, I would certainly think, I mean, as a person who's responsible for the ethics class here in the School of Communication at American University, I would say, yes, of course, we want our politicians and our media to act ethically. So, yes, of course, I think that Zuckerberg makes a good point. But I think he also then, what he's doing is creating a distraction away from the power that Facebook has, from the way that politicians use the platform, from everything that we know concerns about both fake news and disinformation that's been put out into society through the platform that he created. from the platform he profits from. Facebook does not need to do much in order to help Americans make voting decisions, and they are completely skirting what I would say is their professional responsibility here. It's getting harder for Americans to do the work of being citizens when you have this amount of disinformation and misinformation in society. Zuckerberg knows that. They could allow it, and if they wanted to, they could have, even have some kind of a meter showing that how false it is, something in the line of what PolitiFact does. And that would take a fraction of the revenue that they earn from political advertisements. I don't believe that Zuckerberg, when he's saying politicians shouldn't lie, yes, we all hope that in our American democratic process. But the idea that he is not taking more responsibility for the platform that he helped create and that is so powerful both politically and economically is quite frankly ridiculous in my opinion.
Talking to Margo Suska, professor of journalism and mass communication at American University, looking at Facebook, Twitter, and how they're handling political advertising. Margo, for non-social media, what kind of policies are out there for newspapers, TV, radio to decide, hey, this candidate is wanting to run an ad, we think it's factually wrong, we're going to not play it?
Well, that's actually a good point. Listen, during political campaigns, news media, whether that's newspapers or your local broadcast affiliate or cable television, they make a lot of money off of political advertisements. That being said, generally what you have in the newspaper realm are more ethical decisions about what's going to go into content. But you still have the Federal Elections Commission, the Federal Trade Commission taking a look at what is considered advertisements, but in terms of what is a lie, those are really decisions that individual media organizations are going to have to stand to in order for ads that come out on those different platforms, whether those be print, broadcast, cable, or now, as we're seeing, digital. And what makes digital advertising so different, I want to make sure your listeners who aren't on social media understand this, is the way that these algorithms are created for this micro-targeted type of advertising. And that's really what people are starting to question is in the digital realm, the advertising that is so targeted, and if it is a lie, I mean, these are huge concerns about the kind of information that's being targeted to specific users.
Then there's Twitter. Jack Dorsey, the Twitter CEO, said a series of tweets this week saying, we're going to be done taking political ads. What do you make of that approach?
Well, I think it's interesting, and I think it's Twitter is about 22% of Americans use Twitter. It does not have the reach that Facebook has. So Facebook has a reach in America, if you look at users between 25 and 49 years old, roughly 8 in 10 Americans are using Facebook at that age group. Twitter, for all Americans, about 22%. They tend to be younger, more educated, and they vote in the Democratic, with a large D, for Democratic Party. So the fact that Twitter is saying, well, we're not going to take or allow any political advertisements, I think is not really as dominant as Facebook saying it's going to allow the kind of content that it's going to allow. I think the other thing that's so interesting about this debate and that some we may be forgetting in the conversation is that neither Zuckerberg nor Dorsey are talking about other kinds of content that they allow on their social media platforms that may be dressed up as news, that may be misinformation, that may be coming from different bots or other content that may be coming in from other countries. So I'm thrilled we're having a debate about political advertisements, but I think we need to have a larger conversation about the content that's coming through that may be influencing the political process in other ways before 2020.
Let's bring on a caller now at 800-642-1234. Saeed is with us in Green Bay. Saeed, hi.
Yes, thank you for taking my call. I think the minute we empower Facebook to decide what can and can't go on, when we make them the arbiter of truth, we have endowed them with power beyond what should be given to a non-publicly elected and publicly accountable organization. Bias is inherent in every human endeavor. And so if they can choose what is the truth, then their bias will color the outcomes of our elections. So I think Zuckerberg's position is, in fact, the correct one.
Saeed, thanks for the call. What do you think, Margo?
Well, I think that what's left out of this debate about political advertising is the way that Facebook, when something is flagged as potentially damaging content, the way that Facebook uses third-party cleaners to look at that content, oftentimes in other countries, including the Philippines. So I think that this idea that Facebook allows every idea out into the marketplace and is therefore, you know, creating this huge venue for free speech is just simply not true. I mean, there is a lot of content that gets censored that really would be considered political or artistic speech that in other media would get through. So I appreciate what the caller is saying. I just think that, you know, Facebook saying it's this bastion of free speech is just not something that that it does.
Thanks for that call, Saeed. We're talking to Margo Suska, professor of journalism and mass communication at American University. She's with us to talk about social media and political advertising. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think of these policies? Facebook saying they will not fact check ads from politicians in their campaigns. Twitter saying we're not going to run paid political advertising at all anymore. Do you think social media companies should be making sure political ads that show up on their sites are accurate? Do you think political ads don't belong on social media at all? As a person on social media, are you just sick of political stuff on social media, period? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll continue the conversation coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We pick up our conversation now about how social media companies are approaching political ads. Twitter says it's going to ban all paid political ads. Facebook says it will allow them, and it won't fact check ads from politicians. Margo Suska is with us from American University, and you can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you think if Facebook takes money to run ads from campaigns, it should do some level of fact-checking, or should it be anything goes when campaigns are involved? Would you be happy to see political ads disappear from your social media of choice? Do you think social media companies should say when something is inaccurate or misleading? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post on the Ideas Network Facebook page. Back to your calls now. Linda is with us in Green Bay. Linda, hi.
Hi. I truly believe that making Facebook the truth police can devolve really quickly into asking them to check our teenagers' postings for truthfulness, and that could be a nightmare for everybody. What I think should happen is that Facebook should have some type of agreement, and the onus of truth-telling should be on the advertiser, not on Facebook. So Facebook should have some type of agreement that if the advertisement is not true, is found not to be true, that the advertiser would have to pay a $100,000 fine or some type of fine, and then remove the advertisement.
But Linda, who then makes the call on the truthfulness in this idea you have?
Well, it would have to be reported to Facebook, you know, and then, you know, just like you report all that ugly stuff that that you don't want to see, report it to them, and then they can investigate whether or not it's true. But the agreement would be a deterrent to make sure that people would put stuff out there that was truthful.
Interesting. Linda, thanks for the call. Margo, what do you think?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea. I think the question, and she brings up this point again, which is having content flagged. And the issue is that those are not Facebook employees who are double checking when something is flagged that is considered a violation of the platform standards. Oftentimes those are third party people who are working on those, often from Southeast Asia. So the idea that Facebook, which says it employs a large network of people looking at content and things that are flagged, that's not happening from its California offices or from other space, even in the United States. So my concern would be if it's going to continue that, if something were flagged in the case of what your caller said, who's going to be the one checking that? So that would be my concern.
Thanks a lot for that call at 800-642-1234. Let's go now to Susan in Madison. Susan, hi.
Hi. I've really been curious for some time about why, going back in history, we thought that the public airwaves were owned by the people, and there used to be advertising time that was allowed for public service announcements, for instance, that's gone. So why don't we, I think, in a political ad, political information related to our elections, have a system of laws for a variety of types of communication that we create guidelines for. I think about my elderly father looking at the mail that he received that was so full of disinformation. And so I guess I'd like to just kind of expand the question, if I could, and see what your, guest thinks about that.
Susan, thanks for the call. The airwaves is a public resource, and maybe the internet as well.
Well, I think it's actually in my censorship class. We were just talking about this today, so I'm so glad your caller called in, where we were talking about whether or not those restrictions on when we had the fairness doctrine in place, that is, if you had one person's viewpoint on one issue, you had to bring in the other side or offer equal space or equal time to that under FCC rules of the publicly owned broadcast system. So whether or not that would amounted to censorship, and you know, so there are some clearly defined rules, or maybe less defined since the Telecommunications Act of 1996, but about the operating on the public spectrum. The internet is a whole other animal, right? I mean, it's this whole other privately owned for-profit business. And you know, I want to just make sure your callers understand. Facebook in 2016. Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump combined spent $81 million on Facebook ads. We're not talking about just, you know, small change in a, you know, an ad in the, you know, Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. I mean, this is $81 million, and already candidates this year have spent above $35 million with more than a year to go. I mean, this is not a small amount of money. This is huge revenue that Facebook is bringing in for this.
We're talking to Margo Suska from American University about political advertising and social media. Margo, I want to get into something you touched on earlier, that it isn't just the paid advertising. People are pointing out that, hey, Russian-backed influence campaigns reached, I think it was something like 150 million Americans on Facebook with misleading messages, either intended to be divisive in some cases or to support candidate Trump in other cases. You wanted that to be part of this conversation, too. What would you hope to see there?
Well, listen, I mean, I think that's part of why Facebook is finally, why Zuckerberg is in front of people in Congress, and why he gave this impassioned speech at Georgetown a couple of weeks ago, is that we're starting to see some cracks in the Facebook facade here. Let's remember the Cambridge Analytica scandal. The Federal Trade Commission with the Justice Department unveiled a $5 billion fine against Facebook for violating its own users' privacy. I mean, so we've got big concerns about how is Facebook using our information. So when I say it goes beyond political ads, I think that Facebook has been forced to answer some big questions about what it's doing with what we thought for years was just harmless entertainment and fun and reconnecting with friends and family around the globe. So I think that what I ask us to consider is just how it plays this role in our social systems, in our entertainment systems, but in our news ecosystem. It has to answer for the way it's playing a role. And Facebook, when you include Instagram and WhatsApp, has 2.7 billion users globally. I mean, this is just beyond anybody's, you know, wildest dreams in terms of how powerful it's become and how large its reach is. So I just, you know, Zuckerberg has got to be able to answer to some of these questions. And of course, Elizabeth Warren has flat out said she wants them to answer for antitrust concerns and whether or not they're operating as a monopoly. It'd be interesting to see what that looks like politically going ahead into 2020.
We've been talking about corporate policy for Facebook and Twitter, a little bit about government policy. Do you have suggestions for policy for individuals, the people who are social media users, to protect themselves from disinformation and to not spread disinformation?
Well, I mean, that's an interesting point, right? In 2018, MIT came out with a study that showed fake news spread faster in the 2016 election than real news did. So I think now whether or not it was done intentionally or whether or not someone shared it to their Facebook page if they thought it was funny or humorous, I mean, that they didn't look at. But I think that users have got to question what they see on social media in ways that understanding some of these threats to privacy, understanding now that we know Facebook isn't going to police that content, I would say look at it with a very critical eye. And I think users have got to go into the next year looking at the types of news stories that get posted, the types of content that are shared on their wall or that are going viral, and that goes for Twitter as well, just trying to be extremely critical of the content and using a more critical approach. Is this what it claims to be? Especially if they don't know or recognize the source of that information.
In our last few moments, what are you watching for? What's the next part of the story you're paying attention to?
Well, I think, listen, free speech is messy, and I think that is a conversation. I'm thrilled that Zuckerberg is bringing up the issues of free speech, and with issues of hate speech and issues of online forums where we're seeing a megaphone being given to people on the alt-right, I think we've got to be prepared to tackle how we're going to address these concerns in a democratic society.
Margo, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks so much.
That's Margo Suska, professor of journalism and mass communication at American University in Washington, D.C. She was with us today to talk about how Facebook and Twitter are approaching political advertising ahead of next year's presidential election campaign.